This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The probe of ideology. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Welcome into Wednesday, August 7. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The FBI says it's examining what role ideology may have played in recent mass shootings. Meanwhile, President Trump visits El Paso and Dayton today.
The massacre at a Walmart in Texas is prompting new cross-border anxiety for those who make shopping excursions from Mexico to El Paso.
As the presidential candidates await the next debates, they open themselves to potential blunders at unscripted events during the rest of the summer.
And the new trend at high-end steakhouses, beef that's about four times older than normal.
Some of the people really say that older cows make for better tasting steak and more flavorful meat that tastes beefier in a way. So they're really enthusiastic about having this offering.
Wall Street Journal reporter Alina Dizek on restaurants hoping to find the next big thing in older beef. Her report in about 20 minutes. The FBI is looking into the role of ideology in two recent mass shootings, one in Ohio and one a week earlier in California. The agency says the 19-year-old who killed three people at a festival in Gilroy, California, 10 days ago, had made a list of religious and political targets. The killings in El Paso, Texas on Saturday are already considered domestic terrorism and a potential hate crime because of an online manifesto that indicated dislike for Hispanics. FBI Special Agent Todd Wickerham referenced the shooter in Dayton, Ohio.
What, if any, ideology influenced the attacker to conduct this attack? Who, if anyone, helped him or had any advance knowledge of his intentions to conduct this attack? And why he committed this specific act of violence.
A former girlfriend told the Wall Street Journal that the Dayton shooter held politically liberal views and was an atheist. His Twitter feed suggested support for presidential candidates Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. The journal says the California gunman was exploring violent ideologies as well. President Trump has announced that he will visit the scenes of the two weekend mass shootings today, despite backlash by some in both communities who have urged him not to come. Mr. Trump had been widely expected to pay visits to El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. The president's plans have prompted backlash from within some of the communities, especially in El Paso, City Commissioner David Stout.
Regardless of what happened here on Saturday, he has constantly demonized, vilified the type of people that live in this community. You know, he's started his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists and murderers.
White House spokesman Hogan Gidley.
It's ridiculous to try and make those connect in some way. You have to blame the people here who pulled the trigger. Those are the ones who are evil. Those are the ones who are sick and mentally ill, and those are the ones that have to be dealt with.
The president's stance on illegal immigration has been blamed by some people for potentially motivating the suspected shooter. The gunman called the attack a response to the Hispanic invasion of Texas. Mexico's foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, was quick to visit El Paso just across the border after Saturday's deadly massacre at a Walmart. Eight of the 22 people killed were visiting the U.S. to shop, a common day trip that's an important component of the economy in El Paso. The visit by Mr. Ebrard underscores the close economic and cultural relationship between El Paso and Mexico. More from Alicia Caldwell, who covers immigration issues for the Wall Street Journal. Alicia, explain.
So, you know, he was the first top federal official to visit El Paso, and he's from Mexico, which... When you're in El Paso, for a lot of people, it feels like one place, one community, El Paso Juarez. But, you know, his arrival marks something of a change. You know, typically in these situations, which unfortunately we have a typical to look to, you'll get visits from U.S. officials, top U.S. officials, be it the Attorney General or, in many cases, the President. Your listeners probably know the President is planning to come to El Paso and Dayton But in this case, it was the foreign minister of Mexico. There were 8 Mexican nationals who were killed in this attack. 6 others were still in hospitals yesterday. So that government has a vested interest in finding out what happened and making statements, you know, in opposition of the dialogue that's resulted or that prompted this shooting. You know, the manifesto was not subtle. The shooter, in his writing, said he was coming to El Paso specifically to target this group of people. And in this case, as I mentioned, he shot and killed 8 foreign nationals. Yeah. And their government wants to know what's being done and how the investigation is going to operate.
Explain how one of those shopping days might work when folks from Mexico kind of routinely cross the border just to shop at that Walmart, for example.
Right. So, again, El Paso is right up against the border, and every day you have tens of thousands of people who cross for work, for school, to visit relatives, or just to go shopping. This community has what's called the laser visa. So Mexican nationals who live in Juarez or even a little bit further south in the state of Chihuahua can get a visa that allows them to come into El Paso, into the sort of shopping zone, a transit zone of about, I think it's about 30 miles. Allows you to come in, you know, go to the malls, go to Walmart, go to Costco, do whatever shopping you want to do, visit your friends and relatives, and then go home. It's a pretty easy process. The lines of the border are longer today than they were, say, 10 years ago when I was here as the El Paso correspondent for the Associated Press, but nothing has changed in terms of the habits. People still come on a daily basis, again, you know, for shopping or other leisure, and it's a back and forth. And folks from El Paso do the same, you know, going south. We'll walk over the border and do some shopping or what have you, but it's a constant every day. And right now you're about to start school, and so lots of people doing back-to-school shopping.
Hmm. We're speaking with Alicia Caldwell, Wall Street Journal reporter. She covers immigration issues. Her piece is called, "With 8 Mexican Deaths, El Paso Shooting Prompts New Cross-Border Anxiety." So what are people saying now, whether they're from maybe Juarez or Chihuahua? Are they not going to come, or are they taking different precautions?
The business community is who we're hearing from most. Though we did hear from the sister of a victim who says she has a visa to come to the U.S. It's good through December. She doesn't think she'll renew it. She doesn't feel comfortable coming to the United States any longer. The business community is concerned. You know, this community, El Paso, has for years fought the reputation of the border is really dangerous. And this has been going on again, you know, since I was a baby reporter here starting in 2005. Meanwhile, El Paso has been the safest city, or one of the safest cities in the country. Really low homicide rate, typically in the teens. I believe last year it was 23 homicides. It's a city of 860,000 people, a region of 2.5 million people. So that's a really low violent crime rate. And other crime stats are also really low. But now they're going to have to do battle with this again. Now you have a homegrown U.S. citizen attack targeting the Hispanic community, according to his own manifesto. And that's, they fear, going to have reverberating effects.
Thanks, Alicia. Alicia Caldwell, immigration reporter for The Wall Street Journal. 15 minutes after the hour, President Trump does not anticipate a drawn-out trade war with China, despite a warning from Beijing that labeling it as a currency manipulator would have severe consequences for the global order. Mr. Trump, who announced last week he would slap a 10% tariff on a further $300 billion in Chinese imports starting in September, wrote on Twitter yesterday that, quote, massive amounts of money from China and other parts of the world were pouring into the U.S. economy. National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow was asked about the proposed new levies.
We're planning for the Chinese to come here next month. And if there's a good deal or good progress, he may reconsider some things.
Meanwhile, U.S. stocks bounced back yesterday after a sharp drop on Monday. The S&P ended up 1.3% a day after dropping 3%. The NASDAQ rose 1.4%. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
When President Trump is bringing a message aimed at national unity and healing to the sites of the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton today, White House Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley says the president's visit would be similar to those he's paid to grieving communities, including Parkland, Florida, and Las Vegas, with the president and first lady saluting first responders and spending time with mourning families and survivors.
This is a very, very serious moment in our country's history. This president recognizes the gravity of this moment.
But the words Trump offers for a divided country will be complicated by his own anti-immigrant rhetoric, Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley.
His rhetoric has been painful for many in our community, and I think that people should stand up and say they're not happy if they're not happy that he's coming.
It's an unusual predicament for a president to try to console a community and a nation at the same time he's being criticized as contributing to a combustible climate. Lawyers have released hundreds of previously undisclosed names of alleged sexual abusers with ties to the Boy Scouts of America. The attorneys who represent 800 men who say they were victims of childhood sexual abuse in the Boy Scouts disclosed the list after filing a civil lawsuit in Pennsylvania state court by a single plaintiff. China's top office for Hong Kong affairs signaled Beijing's waning patience with protesters in Hong Kong, warning them not to underestimate the strength of the central government and urging the local police to punish those who break the law. The spokesman reiterated Beijing's support for Hong Kong CEO Carrie Lam and the city's police, saying those who play with fire will perish by it. Police and gangs of men clashed with protesters throughout the city on Monday. Nobel Prize-winning writer Toni Morrison is being remembered as the consummate writer who treasured the written word. Morrison, author of books including Beloved and Song of Solomon, who died Monday night at the age of 88, was the first black woman to receive the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1993. In 2012, she was awarded a Presidential Medal of Freedom by Barack Obama.
All right, thank you, Jen. It's 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
This human resources professional is crushing it, thanks to Kronos. And this is his hype song.
You can fall back with the pack. I'm a leader pack.
I've got HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. Now we are
engaging all the best people.
Blast off to the front of the field. This is
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Hey, glad you're with us. Doesn't matter what time of day you listen to this show, it's never too early or late to talk about meat. So here goes. Steakhouses looking for the next big thing or hoping to lure diners with a new look. Old beef. Wall Street Journal reporter Alina Dizik says for high-end steakhouses, an older beef offering can help cultivate a trendy image and bring in more revenue. Alina, what have you found?
I found that a lot of high-end steakhouses are turning to serve more mature cows, so cows that are around 6 to 12 years old versus the 2-year-old cows that they typically serve for steak.
And why is this? Why did this trend come about?
Some of the people really say that older cows make for better tasting steak and more flavorful meat that tastes beefier in a way. So they're really enthusiastic about having this offering.
But, I mean, we've been able to experiment with old meat for a really long time, right? So why is it trendy now? Somebody say something on TV?
Yeah, so we've definitely been able to experiment with old meat, but people are taking a cue from the Basque Country region in Spain, which offers a dish called vaca vieja, which is old cow, and people are really excited about it here, especially some of the Spanish-style steakhouses.
Wow. So if you are in one of these higher-end steakhouses, do you ask for it specifically? Like, hey, I want your old meat, or I want the young steak, or is it shown that way on a menu? How do you find it?
Most of the restaurants that I've talked to actually say on the menu that it's an older cow being served, and some of them are just offering it as specials because the supply for these is not completely regular for some of these shops. So they offer it on a per-special basis.
I see. I know there was one guy who said, I think he was initially skeptical because he thought it might taste like beef jerky.
Yeah, there are definitely some skeptical diners, and a lot of them end up eating it actually side by side with some of the younger steak, and they really love it. They think it tastes a little bit, you know, a little bit meatier in a way, but it does tend to be tougher than you know, your regular high-end steak.
We're speaking with Alina Dizek, contributor to the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece entitled "The New Trend in Steak: Old Beef." So explain maybe what some of the more specific restaurants are doing here in the U.S. with this, how they're presenting it or selling it or marketing it.
So there's a restaurant called Triss in the Woodlands in Texas, and they actually serve it side by side with a 2-year-old steak that's been aged and one that hasn't been aged. And that allows, it's kind of like a sampler platter that allows the diner to see the difference. Another one, Carita in Boulder, allows people to actually meet the piece of meat before eating it and before it's cooked to kind of see the difference. So that's also been a hit with some of the diners there.
And so when you see it, is there a noticeable, visible difference in how the meat looks?
So some of the chefs say that, yes, when you see it, the meat looks darker and more red than a typical two-year-old cow that's been slaughtered.
Thanks, Alina. Alina Dizek, Wall Street Journal contributor. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Every minute you spend updating your company's employee data and systems is a minute you don't spend on your core job. Thankfully, now there's Rippling. It's the first platform that combines all your HR and IT systems together. And when you combine HR and IT, magic happens. Imagine if you could hire someone and take care of all their HR needs, including payroll, health insurance, and 401k, all in as little as 90 seconds. Same goes for your IT. You can order their computer and create their accounts in all the apps you use, like Gmail, GitHub, and Slack, all in one unified onboarding flow. That's how easy Rippling makes running your business. It's also why Rippling won PC Mag's Editor's Choice Award and is the top-rated HR and IT software on G2 Crowd. Stop burning valuable time on admin work. Use Rippling, and your HR and IT will run like a well-oiled machine. If you're looking for an easier way to supercharge your employees, go to rippling.com/morning. and get 20% off. That's rippling.com/morning for 20% off.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us and welcome into Wednesday, August 7. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The FBI investigating ideology in recent mass shootings. President Trump visits El Paso and Dayton today. Another tech service provider has kicked off 8chan, the online message board tied to the massacre in Texas. North Korea says the test firing of 2 ballistic missiles is a warning to the U.S. and South Korea about military exercises. And the service dogs arriving in Texas to comfort the grieving. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. There's nothing small about your business. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors are ready to give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions like computers with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak to an advisor today. With 2 sets of debates and 6 months of fundraising finished, a new stage is opening in the Democratic presidential primary, and that's the summer slog. For 6 weeks until the next debate in mid-September, candidates will shift their focus more completely to the early primary states, grinding through a ritualistic run of picnics, forums, and party fundraisers. David Siders, national political correspondent at Politico, has a look at what's ahead, including the opportunities to be in the headlines for the wrong reasons at unscripted events. Dave, set this up.
Yeah, I think you have this 6-week period between the second set of debates and the next set in September, where really, for the first time in a long time, you don't have the campaign driven either by the need to qualify or perform well in a debate or a fundraising deadline. We don't get another one of those until the end of September. So it's an opportunity for campaigns to reassess, to do groundwork. And then also it's this time of year where just everywhere across in these early primary states, there's just event after event after event that are more unscripted, have candidates out more. And I'm thinking things like the Iowa State Fair, but also, you know, chili cook-offs in New Hampshire, picnics in South Carolina, you name it.
And these are events that are not put together by the candidates. These are events that the candidates are showing up to, generally.
That's right. That's right. And events where lots of people who maybe aren't your typical party activist might show up. So we already saw a little bit of this over the 4th of July. The candidates went to Iowa and participated in parades. Not everybody along those parade routes was there for a political show. And so you got some of this interaction with candidates where there was some heckling and whatnot. And we'll see more of that in Iowa, I think. Not everybody goes to the fair to see, Tom Steyer stand on a stump.
So if you're a candidate trying to maximize your time here in this slow period of August and early September, does what you do depend on where you are, say, in the polling? Like if you're Joe Biden, do you treat this differently than, say, a Cory Booker?
Yeah, I think so. So Joe Biden's plan for the next 6 weeks is he's the front runner, but he also needs to develop a stronger organization in some of these early states. So he'll work on that. This is a good time to work on hiring people. You can do interviews now and onboard them after the fundraising deadline in September if you want to. It's a good time to lay that kind of groundwork. And then if you're a candidate who has a play in a particular state, you can try to make that happen. And I think a good example of that happening is in Bill Bradley kind of putting a scare into Al Gore in New Hampshire, largely because of the work he did at these retail kind of events throughout the summer. Now, that was a long time ago before cable. Maybe a better example, Barack Obama in 2008. He was still way behind Hillary Clinton in summer 2007, but he used the summer to kind of add heft to his campaign. He released some important policy proposals. So there's different ways you can go about it.
We're speaking with David Siders, national political correspondent at Politico. He's written a piece entitled Corn, Soybeans, and Landmines, Dems Sweat Early State Blunders. One of the things, I guess, you mentioned unscripted events before where candidates just kind of show up to things like the Iowa State Fair or these chili cook-offs. I suppose you got to avoid what could be viral video mishaps, like a mustard dropping on your shirt or stuck on your mouth or something like that, right? You can make news for all the wrong reasons right now.
It's true. I think there are whole courses in candidate management about what kind of food to eat, how to have them eat it, because you have to eat the food, but you don't want to make the mistake, like, I don't know, eating the husk on the tamale in Texas. But yeah, you're right. You want to avoid those. And then you want to avoid more important ones. You know, it was at the Iowa State Fair that Mitt Romney made his corporations are people line. Mm-hmm. And that was more than just a gaffe, right? That was something that followed him really throughout the campaign. So those are the kind of things I think you have to be careful about.
I was surprised you said in your story that Kamala Harris, the senator from California, has been slow to organize in Iowa. How come?
I think they made a concerted effort to stockpile resources. And so there wasn't, you know, it's not that she didn't have any presence there, but it was less than like an Elizabeth Warren. And there were fewer personal touches, I think, from the candidate. Now I think they have a little money behind them. It's a good period of time in the calendar to do this. So she's going to try to use the next 6 weeks to really plant a flag there.
Can you realistically expect to make a difference over these 6 weeks during the summer when people generally think about everything else but politics?
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think it's hard to break through, but yeah, I think in a place like Iowa, you can change the narrative around. I think in 6 weeks it will be, if Kamala Harris can execute, for example, what she plans to do, her goal is by the end of 6 weeks to have there be no narrative that she's, you know, was slow to organize, and she very well may accomplish.
Thanks, Dave. David Siders, national political correspondent at Politico. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there are many reasons people get jittery and rightly take precautions when a thunderstorm rolls through. If nature calls, using the bathroom is usually regarded as a safe activity. That was until a Florida homeowner got an explosive surprise over the weekend after a lightning strike triggered a blast that destroyed their toilet. According to Fox News, Mary Lou Ward and her husband were sitting in their Port Charlotte home as a thunderstorm rolled through on Sunday when she said she heard a boom that she says was, quote, the loudest noise I've ever heard. When she stepped into her bathroom, she discovered the toilet was now in hundreds of pieces. A local plumber told the couple the lightning strike ignited methane gas that built up in the pipes and septic tanks. Methane is typically emitted during the breakdown of sewage and waste systems. Besides her toilet being destroyed, Ward said her septic tank and indoor plumbing was also wrecked. The blast also broke a window in the couple's master bedroom and destroyed yard decorations. Thankfully, in all this, no one was hurt.
Holy cow.
They just thankfully were in the right room, I guess, that didn't get hit by any of this flying debris.
Boy, it seemed like a ha-ha story when you first said the toilet exploded.
Right.
Then all of a sudden you talk about the septic tank and indoor plumbing.
Yes.
And now you are into...
Yes.
An enormous recovery fee and phase, I guess, right?
Yes, this is going to be an expensive repair, it appears.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something you hear about, I don't think, sort of, you know, using the bathroom during a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
I know, like, taking a shower is generally not a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, using any kind of electrical appliance is not a good idea, but sitting on the toilet, we don't think of as being dangerous.
That's, I mean, now you're into homeowners insurance
and
all this other stuff, you know, digging up the tank in all likelihood, just from a thunderstorm. This was not, like... warnings days in advance of impending hurricane.
No hurricane came through,
Oh, man.
And we know, Gordon, there are plenty of legitimate reasons to dial 911, but a rumbling tummy generally isn't accepted as one of them. A Florida boy got a lesson in emergency etiquette after dialing first responders last Friday because he wanted a pizza. The 5-year-old apparently took his older sister's phone without her knowledge and made the call to the Sanford Police Department. Three officers responded to the home in suburban Orlando for a well-being check. They explained that the 911 system is only for emergencies. Then they went to Pizza Hut and brought a large pizza back to the house.
Nicely.
So
nice
the
touch.
Question is, Gordon Deal, as a parent, did this boy actually learn a lesson? Because they brought him a pizza anyway. Now, we made for a cute photo op with the boy and the pizza and the officers, everybody smiling, but they brought him a pizza anyway.
Right. He's got five new friends who are cops in the Orlando PD who will willingly bring him a pizza.
Right. So That's funny. Next week when he gets hungry again, there's a chance he's calling 911.
Mike, you just went to the Florida Weird Stories file to find these two stories about Florida.
We'll find a different state for the next time.
13 minutes now in front of the hour. If you drop off very early at night and find yourself up as early as 4 a.m., scientists might have worked out what makes you tick. Yahoo News says researchers from University of California, San Francisco studied people with advanced sleep phase, as it's called, and say the quirk of the body clock is far more common than believed. In fact, up to 1 in 300 adults may have it. Advanced sleep phase means that the body's clock, or circadian rhythm, operates on a schedule hours earlier than most people's. The senior author says while most people struggle with getting out of bed at 4 or 5 a.m., people with advanced sleep phase wake up naturally at this time, rested and ready to take on the day. In this studio, by the way, Jennifer, Mike, and I consider a 4 a.m. wake-up sleeping in. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the FBI has opened an investigation into what role ideology played in the weekend's mass shooting in Ohio and one a week earlier in California, part of a widening federal inquiry into the recent violence as domestic terrorism. In Dayton, FBI Special Agent Todd Wickram says authorities want to know if anyone helped the shooter.
We have not made any final investigative conclusions into the motive of the shooter or if he was assisted by any other people in this attack.
President Trump will visit El Paso and Dayton today to meet with first responders and families to the shooting's victims, but he's likely to be met by protesters in both cities due to his divisive political talk. El Paso Commissioner David Stout is among those who wish Trump wouldn't come.
Regardless of what happened here on Saturday, he has constantly demonized, vilified the type of people that live in this community. You know, he's started his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists and murderers.
Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley also questioned whether the visit will help and expressed disappointment in the president's aftermath remarks that included an erroneous reference to Toledo instead of Dayton. The Galveston Police Department has issued an apology after disturbing images of an arrest sparked outrage on social media. The photo taken by a witness shows white officers leading a black man through the streets of Galveston on horseback, tethered to what looked like a leash. Galveston Police Chief Vernon Haley says the suspect had been warned several times against trespassing before he was arrested, but in a statement, the chief apologized, saying the department has changed its policy to prevent the use of the technique. Naomi Osaka is moving up on the court and off. Forbes says her total income grew to $24.3 million last year, driven mainly by her off-court earnings, which soared to $16 million from $1.5 million the year before. 23-time Grand Slam winner Serena Williams remains the highest-paid female athlete, with total earnings last year of $29.2 million. U.S. women's soccer player Alex Morgan is the highest non-tennis player on the women's list at number 12, with earnings of $5.8
million. Wow, the vast majority here all in just endorsements.
Absolutely.
Right, not in salary.
And it doesn't hurt if you don't look pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Next Gen, 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Not all heroes walk on two legs. In the wake of a horrific shooting in El Paso, Texas, scores of first responders, medical professionals, and other emergency service providers have stepped up to help the victims. Fox News says on top of that, healthcare providers have ensured that therapy dogs are present for both the workers and the victims. Methodist Health Systems chronicled the journey of two therapy dogs named Chanel and Rudy as they made their way to El Paso. It posted Facebook photos of the dogs working with first responders. A description said Chanel and Rudy arrived in El Paso on Sunday morning to provide their unconditional love and support. KSAT 12 Television says the dogs are trained to seek out individuals in crisis and provide comfort. They'll be visiting hospitals and first responder stations across El Paso for the next several days. Methodist Health Systems said in a press release, quote, "The rate of suicides by emergency responders has escalated. These dogs can reach places in the heart that no human can." That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.